This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:35 a.m. right now. Now, as you have just heard on the news, you got the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones gaining 5% each, while the NASDAQ ended up 5.8%. So overnight, you've got U.S. equity staging its biggest rally since 2009, perhaps offering some reprieve from the sell-off this month. On the line now, we have Vishnu Varathan, Head of Economics and Strategy for Oceania and the Treasury Department at Mizuho Bank. Good morning, Vishnu. So looking at the rally in U.S. stocks here, I mean, how do you read into this? Is this a turning of the tide, so to speak, in terms of global risk appetite?
Well, I think there will be ebbs and flows, and this was really an opportunity for, I think, some participants to either bottom pick or cover shorts as they head into the year end, because we do recall that, you know, it's been a rather brutal sell-off. And arguably and ostensibly, some of the market participants would have been rather short in the markets, and I don't think anybody wanted to hold on to positions per se. The reason why I'm beating around the bush with this is really to put across the point that there's been no convincing bullish revival per se. I mean, there's no particular good news that made us think that, hey, you know, 2019 is going to be a stellar year that would then justify a 5 to 6% rebound, depending whether you're looking at NASDAQ or Dow and S&P.
Right. So this appears to be purely on a technical side. But then, you know, looking into next year, we've got those same old factors that have been blamed for driving equity or blaming for driving sentiment here. Everything from that U.S.-China trade war, the Fed, slower growth projections for 2019. You know, could we see any perhaps catalyst that could turn things around on those three fronts?
But I think what's going to happen is we're probably going to be faced with the fact that, you know, two things are going to play out, and it's really an extent of degree. One is you'll find a so-called erosion of profits. If we think about U.S.-China trade war being in some sort of a limbo, that's to say it doesn't get dramatically worse, or it doesn't get, or we don't get out of the woods in an instant, then what's going to happen is, due to the tariffs imposed on both sides, you're going to have profit margins being squeezed, and also you're going to have higher costs that's passed on to consumers, meaning they'll have less spending power. So at the end of the day, this so-called squeeze in the profit margins will translate into weaker earnings, and that's going to lead to stock markets not really feeling that great in any case. So that's the first point. The second point is, if the Fed means what it says about the balance sheet roll-off and they continue it at reducing it at $50 billion a month, it means that the Fed is going to suck out $600 billion worth of liquidity, dollar liquidity, from the market next year. And that cannot be good for equity markets. So equity markets are going to struggle to swim against that tide, that receding tide. And so that's also going to look pretty tough. And at the end of the day, we also want to question what goes on with oil, because even as last night, as equities rallied, we also don't that oil also rebounded very smartly to a larger extent on a percentage basis. So if oil prices continue to drop, I mean, the age-old argument is lower oil prices mean better profitability because energy costs are lower. But that holds up to a certain point. Any crash beyond that, you know, translates into much lower profits and margins for refiners, chemical guys, and all of them. And these guys, these are reflected in the energy sector sell-off in the equity market as well. So putting together all of this, I think our base case scenario is for a gradual slowdown of growth, which will be reflected in you know, a continuing correction, albeit not perhaps not as brutal as long as the worst case outcomes are avoided with the trade wars and so on and so forth.
Vishnu, speaking about oil, what's your take on oil prices? Because oil in London fell below the $50 mark a barrel for the first time since July 2017. They fell, I think, yesterday. But as you mentioned, overnight oil prices have rebounded. So what's your take on oil prices?
I think oil will struggle to find its footing, you know, smartly above $70. Our long-standing view is oil prices will continue to slide because markets are not convinced. I mean, for the whole of this year, U.S., Saudi, and Russia put together have added 3.2 million barrels per day in production, and so OPEC's 1.2 million barrels per day cut it's really a bit of a joke if they are expecting markets to buy into something changing dramatically, especially with the Iranian waiver. So we've got two takeaways with oil. One is if oil slides below $50, then at least we know the marginal U.S. producers will hold back. So that may backstop oil before it crashes below 40 or 30. But equally, for oil to go up sustainably above $65, $70, we either need U.S. production to slow down dramatically or for the Iranian waivers to kick in, because markets have factored that in already.
Right. So it looks like that 9.2% gain in Brent crude futures, that's driven by sentiment rather than the fundamentals, you know, good old supply and demand, like you pointed to earlier. Now, Vishnu, earlier also you mentioned the gradual slowdown of growth that's expected for next year. What about, say, any outliers and anyone that can buck the trend next year? Any economic outperformers that you may have identified for 2019?
Well, I think it's, you know, being an economist and sitting on the fence is always easier to paint with the same brush than changing brushes. But if I had to identify one, then I would have to throw in the usual caveats, of course. The caveats being, if most economists think that the way to backstop growth is boost up infrastructure, then one of the outperformers that may arise surprisingly is Australia, because we keep thinking of Australia being very, very closely tied to China. So the U.S.-China trade wars haven't panned out very well for the Australian currency or our view of the economy. But if China then buckles down and says, let's do more infrastructure, and everybody buys into the same story, that commodity boost can lead to Australia outperforming many other economies at an unexpected time. But of course, the overall global picture and the Asian picture is going to look rather uncertain, even if we avoid Armageddon situation with U.S.-China, because we are unsure what U.S. Wants exactly out of the deal, and this could be a slow burn type of drag on Asia.
Well, Vishnu, how prepared are emerging Asian economies in withstanding any external shocks?
I think to some extent, what has happened over the years is a lot of the EM Asia economies have built up their FX reserves. So that makes them somewhat more resilient to a sudden run on the economy, so to speak. So there is some degree of buffer. But what has also eroded at the margin is over the last 10 years, post Lehman, EM Asia has also ramped up a lot on leverage, which means higher interest rates will hurt more. So I think the upshot of it is that emerging Asia is probably not going to be staring down an abyss like they did in 98. But if there is a conspiracy of much higher borrowing costs from tighter dollar funding and the worst-case scenarios in U.S.-China, then you could see growth screeching to a much slower pace. And I think the current median forecasts do not factor in the worst-case scenarios.
But looking at Malaysia specifically, Vishnu, we note that our FX reserves are edging closer towards that psychologically important $100 billion mark. So when it comes to offsetting some of these external risks, right, what about on the fiscal or monetary side? Do you see Malaysia having enough ammunition, in terms of what the central bank has and what the Ministry of Finance has to offset some of these external shocks?
I think for Malaysia's case, what it has going for it is a long-term plan that's boosted by transparency and longer-term fiscal consolidation. However, the near-term fiscal buffer is rather limited because, by the budget's own admission, there's going to be a near-term reliance on oil prices. So unfortunately, given the very bearish turn in oil prices, means that the fiscal capacity to buffer a shock is going to be limited. And BNM can cut rates, but that would also have limited effect given that already rates are low to begin with. And the FX reserves is purely a function of tougher trade situation, the oil prices, and to some extent a strong dollar. So whilst we think that the fundamentals in Malaysia remain very strong, the near-term downside risks to the ringgit remain especially because of oil and a very turbulent external economy on which Malaysia continues to rely on. And we can square that with the fact that domestic buffers such as infrastructure projects are being rationalized as well. So we can't have our cake and eat it.
Mm. Well, great stuff as always, Vishnu. Thank you so much and a very happy new year to you. I'm sure you'll continue to keep us posted on developments in 2019. That was Vishnu Varadhan, Head of Economics and Strategy for Oceania and the Treasury Department with Mizuho Bank in Singapore. Coming up, we'll take a look at some of the top business stories of the day, so stay tuned right here to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.